Rabbiting on.
Woo! Welcome. Hi, everyone. This is so exciting. A pop-up Rabbiting On, a special. So I wonder, what could be the reason for bringing us all back together out of retirement? Rabbi Miriam, of course. We have been reunited like some sort of 80s girls pop band to celebrate Miriam's 18 years at Finchley Reform Synagogue. 18 years in a job is rare for anyone, especially in these days. I think people move careers and spaces quite often, don't they? And we know that in that time, Miriam has touched so many lives, including my own. I'm a product of Finchley Reform in lots of ways, and particularly through meaningful rituals, marking endings, beginnings, transition moments.
Miriam, what is your new project? Can you say a little bit about it?
I'd love to. So I'm setting up a new organisation, something called Wellspring, which is a centre of well-being with a mikveh, the ritual of mikveh at its heart, helping people to mark time, both in a traditionally Jewish way, but also to be able to kind of find acceptance. We all know that life is rarely exactly as we would want it to be. But what does it mean to be able to open new chapters, accepting how life is, rather than bringing so many of those negative feelings we often carry with us for so long and that cause barriers in opening kind of positive new starts?
Oof, it's so important. I mean, we've got so much to talk about because we haven't been together for quite a long time. And I feel really energised. I've got too much energy. So I'm going to throw the energy over to you, Miriam. What gives you life and energy in the work that you do?
Those moments where you see community as creating the world as it could or should be, that I really see our communities as like this little microcosm of how the world could be. And so those things of when someone comes and says, I really need this, or I don't understand that. And I know that there's somebody in the community who is the person that if they were talking to that person would give them the answer or the connection or the foot up or the door open into the next stage. That's the great privilege of what happens when you're part of society where everybody's connected, where everybody recognizes they have responsibility for each other, rather than kind of trying to just get through life making sure it's as okay for you as possible. So that thing of kind of the glimpses of creating society within community, I absolutely love. And I think more recently, you know, you talked about 18 years being a really long time. And one of the things it's really given me is the kind of, you know, the l'dor v'dor sense of this stuff really does pass down the generations. And I can see that it can go on infinitely because what I can see is, you know, the first bat mitzvah, who's now, I've also now done their wedding, or the first bar mitzvah who I've now done his baby's baby blessing. The kindergarten kids who are now kind of at university and coming back to kind of help out and kind of to be the teachers. Like there's something quite extraordinary about what it means to see a glimpse of eternity because you're part of so many people's lives. You can see how things pass through the generations, and I'm loving that.
Quite often we don't actually always see what's happened, where those thoughts have gone, what that teaching did. And then suddenly, you know, 8-9 years later, someone will come and tell you that X meant this to them and that they still remember Y that you did. And those moments of, oh gosh, I never knew that that went there, or that someone actually heard that, and it's so rewarding.
And it also highlights, I think, the responsibility we hold, because you think, wow, that's amazing, and also like you realize the weight of what you're doing in every moment is very powerful as well. And I really love the idea, and definitely agree and see it as well, that in community work, we're building the world as we want it to be. And I think we've said here before, like, understanding that communities, progressive Jewish communities, are can be at their best quite countercultural to the world that we live in, because what we're talking about, I think, is about building relationships, deep, enduring, intergenerational relationships, and grounding in Torah, in meaningful Jewish ritual and experience. And that's not the way that at the moment it feels the world is kind of drawing us towards, which is much more transactional and maybe disconnected. To have spaces that are really connected is definitely the world that I want to be in long term. So, yeah, it's good to be reminded of all of this as well, and the different ways we can act it out in different roles as well. So I think that leads us really nicely into readying ourselves to make change. Like, how do we do this? Because that's one component, I think, of building these communities of resilience, communities that are the world that we want them to be, that ritual plays a huge part in that, that if we're able to do transition well, we're able then to really create people who can move in the world with more ease, who can accept, as in Miriam's words, like what's gone on, and then be, not put that out into the world in ways that are like angry or you know, disjointed or disconnecting, but actually move in the world in a way that is more fluid as well. And you know, we know that also change is just constant. Impermanence and change is just kind of at the heartbeat of what it is to be human, certainly what it is to be Jewish, all this change. And it's shared in many different traditions of teachings of how you deal with change. And we know we've got our King Solomon, who was searching for wisdom. And in doing so, he had an answer that came back to him. And that was that the only constant thing is that things will change. Gamze Yavor, this too shall pass. Nothing stays the same. And producer Dan says, I do not know this, the second law of thermodynamics is all about entropy, how things move from order to disorder or change. Really, it's the condition of what it is to be human to go through change, but I guess it's on us to think about how do we mark change and ready us for it. And there's a lot of like change theory that the important thing with change is to be able to have a moment to grieve, like the loss of what you're going through, that it isn't about denying that you're losing anything and being super toxic positive about the future. So part of my question is like, how do we hold rituals that are able to hold a bit of the grief so that we can move forward and so that we can accept change? And how do we do it in a way that we don't get stuck in the grief and able to move forward? So I don't know if you've got like particular examples or just, yeah, what your reflections are on that moment of like, how do you mark change, holding some of the grief as part of that process?
You know, the ability for mikveh to honour transition, whether it's celebration like, you know, a birth, special birthday or getting married or ordination, to processing the really awful things in life, you know, like processing some kind of trauma in your childhood or recovering from chemo, all sorts of different moments that the mikveh is special for. But actually our tradition has so many opportunities. I think, you know, our grieving rituals are really well thought out in giving us space to constantly revisit grief and bring them to the surface so that we can hold them in the light and then carry on living with kind of a public acknowledgement of that loss. And one of the rituals that I've adopted over the last sort of 15 years is something called soul candles, where during Elul, I'll gather with a group in the community and we roll beeswax candles. And this is actually rooted in an old shtetl custom where women used to measure out graves and use the wick to do the measuring, and then would make candles to remember their loved ones and to pray for the living. And there are accounts of this where women were like sobbing into the candles and the tears were kind of collected in the wax. And then they would be used to light the synagogue on Kol Nidre in some communities. And you imagine this candlelit synagogue holding the souls and hope of loved ones. And then occasionally our tradition doesn't necessarily have the ritual we want. And then we get to be super creative. So writing liturgy for mikveh, which already existed, but creating new liturgies. But also, I remember when a congregant had her daughter start her period, she wanted to have a ritual that she could do with her. And we talked about mikveh, we talked about other things. And it really inspired me, so that when my daughter went through that moment, I wasn't quite expecting it. And on like half an hour on a Sunday morning, I suddenly created a period picnic. And she and I went and picked a load of food and sort of simanim, like a seder, And we sat in a park and had this little ritual moment, just the two of us, of talking through symbolic foods and what they might mean about fertility, about bodily autonomy, about saying no, about rejecting people's ways of seeing our bodies, about holding the potential for life in our bodies. It was just one of those moments where you're so glad that you have the resources you have to be able to do something meaningful.
I think we often take our rituals for granted in terms of like, it's just what we do. And actually taking a step back and being able to say the rabbis of old were incredible psychologists, because actually so much of this was kind of woven into an understanding of what we needed. You know, Shiva and mourning rituals are so incredible in that sense of, you know, my understanding of Shiva, of that first half of the week really being about the deceased, and the second half of the week being more about the mourners and what does it mean to be able to kind of be looking ahead and looking to the future without that person, that even, you know, lost to a lot of our reform communities at the moment. But what does it mean to get up from Shiva and go for a walk? That thing of like, actually, how am I now changed in the outside world? And kind of almost that first taste of the outside world being something supported after Seder. My go-to is also often Havdalah, starting really from when I realized that having a baby and being in the rabbinate, Friday night was difficult, right? Because Friday night started, I didn't have the luxury of being able to say, well, now we're a young family, let's make Friday night dinner earlier and all of those kind of things. And I didn't want that weekly ritual moment to be something only celebrated communally and not something round the table. But actually then Havdalah, where it's much more at a relaxed time, we were being more kind of au fait with when Shabbat went out for us on a Saturday afternoon stroke evening, rather than necessarily at all times of the year waiting for it to get dark. But that sense of what does it mean to mark time? What did it mean as a family to be able to look back and say, what have we achieved this week? What are we proud of? What, you know, what have we loved? And what do we want from the week ahead? And I think so often Havdalah can be that motif of separation and separating time. What does it mean when you know, for Wellspring, I'm really thinking about moments like, what does it mean when you have to take a loved one to live in a care home? The care home's often brilliant at being able to welcome and open a new chapter for the resident. But what about the person who has to drop them off and get back in the car and go home to their very different life? And what does it mean to mark that moment of separation with a Havdalah style moment of being able to say, you know, this is the joy and the wonderfulness that I'm bringing from the chapters before. This is actually the difficulties that we're now not needing to take into our life, the often really difficult last few months that have led to this moment. And what does it mean to be able to look to the future, and how is this next chapter going to be? And so for me, Havdalah is a great go-to as well, in terms of being able to acknowledge the blessings and the challenges of the past and be able to look to the future.
I think what's really interesting, reflecting on what you've both said, is that we have very strong Jewish rituals. Havdalah, I use loads with like mixed faith couples, dual heritage couples, of weaving together lives, the breaking of the glass in the wedding. There's always pain. And like couples come with pain, like people who can't be there, illness, whatever it is. And we have the rituals. And I think what's exciting about Wellspring and about this conversation and about the work of communities is finding the moments that we can also bring to those rituals. Like, we have the rituals. It's just about saying, like the care home example, or retirement, you know, things that we don't ritually mark, or transition, change of name. How do we hold, or surgery, like how do we hold those moments using what we have? You know, might be going in front of the ark and just crying or screaming or just opening it and being with the Torah scrolls. But how do we use what we have in innovative ways? I've done some work recently about the Exodus story, particularly thinking about the horrors since October. in that you can really see that the Israelites weren't able to process the grief of the change or have ritual to hold them. They like come out saying, we're so sad, like we've left everything behind. And we kind of laugh at it because it is quite comical. And Moses and God are just like, get on with it. And then they just wipe everyone out because they weren't able to deal with it. I think, gosh, what if we'd have had those rituals in that moment of people being able to create candles together or, you know, have a mikveh or something of saying that was then and we're moving forward, holding on to all of that. I don't know. I just think there are real moments where ritual could have changed history as well. So before we kind of wrap up, Miriam, let's just have another moment of reflection for you, but also to help us, I think about what it is to be in community, what it is to have these, to be bound together through these ritual moments, through people's lives and generations of families as well. Is there something that you're particularly kind of sad to be leaving behind? I know that you're still going to be part of the community and like rabbiing for a very long time forward. This isn't the end, but it's an end of a moment, isn't it? And then what are you most excited about as well? And kind of what you're doing to help hold those two things together in ending, and then we can kind of reflect on it with you.
I mean, I think part of the reason that I could never see myself just going off on into another community is part of that thing of not being able to leave the relationships behind in that way, of not wanting to separate from community, even though there's a change of role. And therefore that idea that the space that is so important to me is still the space I can be Jewish in. You know, I can still come to shul and sit in services and know that they are services that I love and expressions of Judaism that I love is really important to me. And I guess means that part of the loss piece is not quite as big as it could be if I was kind of moving physically away. Although I think the piece I'm going to miss most is the creativity piece, because what I love about FRS is that ability to just be able to kind of try new things and to be able to say, how do we respond to the crazy world as we know it? And therefore, how can we just like try and find that creativity? So, you know, the pandemic was brutal and awful, and we experienced so many losses as a community, and yet the kind of ability for it to create space to be creative and innovative was extraordinary. And so I think I'm going to miss mostly that piece that is the space, the community that is so accepting of trying new things and change and creativity, and kind of being part of the thinking through of those ideas.
You have been bringing creativity and meaning to lots and lots of people. And I know Robin and I both have our own moments and memories of how you've helped us through things, how you've given us nuggets of advice, made connections, and often shown me the rabbi that I want to be. Your very longtime friend and colleague, Cantor Zoe Jacobs, wanted us to include just a few of her favourite memories. There must be so many to choose from, but we wondered what you would pick, but this is what Zoe picked. So there was the first B'yachad service that you did 10 years ago, and when everyone was silent during the Amidah, everyone had their talitot over their heads, and that sense of silence that filled the room. There was taking the scrolls out of the building, the old building, with an online service where basically everyone cried and said goodbye to that space. And then the first service, that Pesach morning back in your new building, where you had all the past chairs bringing back the Sifrei Torah, and those sort of amazing moments of change and transition and celebration that you were able to bring to the community. And of course, that first sermon that you gave on Kol Nidre, it wasn't your first sermon, but the first sermon where you talked about the idea of how mikveh and infertility had impacted you. And I mean, really, that feels like the stepping stone moment from which this moment has grown. I remember seeing it spreading virally across Facebook and listening myself. And how you and Zoe rewrote the music for Ki Hinei Kehomer as that song straight after the sermon to hold this incredible piece of not only sharing, but deep Jewish wisdom that came with that vulnerability that you offered to the community. And I know that you've shared your vulnerability when I've been vulnerable and have helped me see that there's a way through. And in many ways, we've all been able to do that for each other. But I know that for Zoe, there's been an incredible privilege of doing that professionally over and over again with you.
Mm. Yeah. I also remember that sermon and read it at a time when I wasn't going through infertility and then second child infertility. I remember being in the hospital and going, I need to read that again, and it giving a great deal of strength in that moment. So it's that kind of the courage of being able to share something and the ripples of that, that again, going back to what we said before, you never know where that's going to land, but you just put it out there. And it's so powerful. And of course, we're doing this as a way, I think it's a great gift really, in FRS, but also this conversation to end well. A lot in our world, we're not able to end something well and then begin something well as a consequence of it. So I think that there is a great gift in us doing this. And of course, this is only an end of a moment. There are lots of beginnings and continuings and transition moments and time ways to work together. So this is just marking a moment. But I think the power of being able to do what we're doing is actually there's a lot of gratitude. There's a lot of power in being able to say, you know what, this has meant this to me, and this is what I'm excited about. Here's my purpose now. This is what I'm holding on to. And I think that's the power of these kind of conversations. They're really important for everyone involved. But just before we finish, we've put together some fun stats, Miriam, that you may not have heard before. And it, with this terrible analogy, like Paul Daniels has a glamorous assistant, Debbie McGee, I have Debbie Young Summers, who's going to help us finish with some fun facts about your 18 years.
Well, I wish I'd put on more sparkle for this, but you, Miriam, have bought...
I think Dan could do a filter, something shimmery in a filter. I think you'll look lovely. Sequins.
Challenge made. but this is the sparkle that you have brought, Miriam, in your 18 years at FRS. There's some incredible statistics here. Miriam has seen the community double in size from 500 households to almost 1,000. 1,150 members and children have increased to 2,300. You have stood under 75 chuppahs plus your own.
And Zoe's twice.
And Zoe's twice. And you've officiated at another 15 mixed faith blessings. You have worked so many extra hours. It's as if you have worked more like 27 years than 18. And in those 27 years of working in 18, you have probably spent around 9 years on pastoral calls, WhatsApps and life cycle events, 3 years leading services and writing sermons, 3 years in meetings.
Just one council meeting.
9 years doing admin. And our wonderful statisticians are amazing, but they couldn't even count just how many blessings you have offered to the people around you, whether in literal words of blessing or just bringing blessing into their lives. You have supported over 1,000 families through life cycle events, many more than once. As you said, you've already started to see that L'Adorvador generation to generation moment. And you are still using the same tallit that you had when you first started at FRS. What a journey that tallit's been on.
Mm. Well, it's literally got my name on it. It's Miriam themed and helps me to feel that connection with generations past and to try and aspire to be the leader that I would hope to be. It's a good name.
It's a great
and your,
name.
And your mum bought it for you, didn't she?
Yes, exactly. So I have very that kind of her feel of her with her presence with me.
Mm. It's a good example of ritual, practical ritual as well. But Miriam, if that wasn't enough, you have sung a remarkable, we think probably more, 936 Lachadodis over the year. And
not beautifully.
It wasn't about the quality, it's the quantity in this that matters. You have also, you're sounding fine, hopefully you're hearing fine, because we think that you must have been present at no fewer than 1,800 blasts of the shofar, which is pretty incredible. And it's remarkable that you're still standing, because we think that you've consumed around 32 bottles of Palwin, all the Kiddushim over the year, all the little sips at Cuddle Up, at Friday night, at Saturday morning, all the festivals.
They mount up, they do.
Yeah, it's added up. And we've calculated that your eyes have been over and your yad has followed. Are you ready for it? Over 5,486,490 letters in the Torah, and probably more given all the rehearsals and practice, but yeah, over 5 million letters of Torah.
That is a lot of Torah.
It's a lot of Torah. And
I hope that takes into account all those bar mitzvah rehearsals.
Oh, that's true. It's more. We can add that up
it's
later.
It's never enough.
Never too much Torah.
No, the Torah keeps on coming, as it should. And to finish with a finale, drum roll, we are happy to report, rabbiting on exclusive, independently verified, that Rabbi Miriam Berger has completed just over 24 miles, also known as an actual marathon, having completed 1,892 processions around the synagogue carrying the scrolls.
Mazel tov.
I mean,
Mazel tov.
It's surprising I'm not fitter, really.
Well, but now you can say you've done a marathon. It's great. No one needs to know exactly.
Carrying the Torah.
Yeah, carrying the Torah and following them around. Yeah, how does that feel as we wrap up our pop-up rabbiting on?
I mean, it makes me realise why I'm quite so tired.
Literally, it's been a marathon.
It's like, not only is synagogue and kind of my life at FRS, it's been really an extraordinary privilege. Like, the community, the relationships, the lay leaders who probably have run even more marathons in terms of what they have been doing, and just, you know, being able to know the right person to turn to for the right stats is always that extraordinary privilege of what it means to be able to have all of those lay leaders giving so much of their humor, their wisdom and their time, and also to have the most extraordinary colleagues both here at FRS and you guys and the, you know, the wider rabbinic and cantorial teams of just other people that know what it is that this crazy clergy life is, and being able to kind of walk that journey with you all. So a massive thank you, Debbie and Robin, for creating this for me, with me. It's been really, really fun to be back with you and chatting, and I hope this is the beginning of a new series too.
Oh, well, with that in mind, and thank you, Miriam, for letting us come in and jump into the celebrations.
Yay.
Big shout out to producer Dan and to Pam, who really helped with the stats to get all of that together. Really gives a flavour of the job. So, yes, we've got lots more celebrating to do and continuing work together. But that is it for today. To all of you out there, keep subscribed, because we want you to watch our feed and watch this space. That's all I'll say for now. But we look forward to lots more conversations. Bye. See you later.
L'chaim.
L'chaim. To Miriam.
L'chaim.
Simon Tov. Mazel Tov. We've got loads of great songs. Bye, everyone.